clear of the closing doors, please.
Welcome to Subway Sports Talk. My name is Peter Kennedy, and I am your host. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning into SST on Apple Podcasts, App, Spotify, and on YouTube. We're here today to talk about some New York Knicks basketball as they got a nail-biter of a victory over the Brooklyn Nets on Tuesday night. But that's not really what we're here to talk about. I want to talk about and hammer some of these trade ideas because there's a lot of things getting thrown out there about the Knicks. There's a lot of things to talk about in discussion about the rest of their season and what should be expected. What could they do? What should they do? Because right now with all these different narratives going on, you're thinking about where they're at in the standings today, how they stack up against the teams surrounding them in the standings today, and where they can possibly be by the end of this season. Obviously, it's been incredibly exciting to see them rip off these wins after the trade for OG Anunoby all in 2024. I mean, in the new year, they are one of the best teams in the league. Obviously, there are some other teams in the Eastern Conference also playing well. Just look at the teams around them. The Cavs have won 8 out of 10. The Knicks have won 8 out of 10. The Sixers have won 6 in a row. The Bucks just fired their coach, but they're still at 30 wins already, and the Celtics are the Celtics. We know what they've been doing. You also look in the Western Conference, and you see the Clippers playing incredibly well. The Thunder are still killing it. Sorry, there are teams playing well in the new year, but the Knicks are very much in that conversation since January 1st as one of the most impressive teams of the new year. That's obvious. We know this. We know the impact that OG Anunoby has had on this team. But the questions that are still remaining, as the Knicks are now 10 games above 500, aren't about what the current roster can do. It's about what the current roster cannot do. And with all these trades being swirled around, all the rumors out there, as Knicks fans, we have some serious questions to ask ourselves about the ceiling of this team, about the holes of this team, the health of this team, and where they should be looking right now versus after the season. But again, Pete Kennedy, Subway Sports Talk, right here. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review on your podcast app, Apple Podcast app, Spotify, notification bell on YouTube, drop a comment, hit us on social media at Subway Sports Talk. You know what to do. If you're listening to me say these words, I must think that you either listen to this podcast regularly or maybe you're an occasional listener, depends on the topic, but maybe you follow us on social media. Give us some love out here on Subway Sports Talk. I appreciate y'all listening. I see the numbers popping up every time. Every time I put an episode out, I see the people. I don't know who all you are. I would love to know who you are. So get to know me. DMs are open at Subway Sports Talk or at Pete Kennedy, two Y's on the end. Love to have a nice talk with you guys on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, whatever. And I got to say, most recent clip about Jalen Brunson on TikTok particularly got a lot of engagement, which was great. Love talking with the people who also just love basketball and love to talk about hoops and these players. And there was one guy in particular, I guess I'll pull his name up while I'm talking here for a second. It was really awesome because we didn't agree at all, actually. We pretty much disagreed. And normally on all these social media apps, you know, you start disagreeing with somebody and you start getting a little bit malicious. You start saying, oh, well, you don't know ball. You're a casual. You're a this, you're a that. And all in all, we disagreed vehemently as he was hyping up Trae Young a little bit, saying Trae Young over Brunson. And we went back and forth for about 12 comments, which was great. And at the end of the day, after all these comments, the back and forth of me saying Jalen Brunson is more efficient, I'd rather have me impacts winning more. He was like, no, I still think Trae is better, da da da. And then I just said, you know what? This was great. It's nice to have a good back and forth without getting personal. And that person was Brian with a, I don't know what type of flag that is, but Brian on TikTok, shout out to you. Maybe you're listening today. It was a great back and forth. It was a great conversation. That's the type of stuff that social media is so good for. Sometimes, obviously we know it can get pretty heated. We don't try to be heated on our pages. When it happens and we embrace it and we debate and we stand our ground. But generally these great back and forths, these great debates are the reason we do this. And that's what we're going to do now moving forward to this episode as we try to figure out what the Knicks could do in the trade market and beyond. And what we're not going to do today, we're not going to touch on the football, right? So this is coming out on Wednesday. A lot of people talk Chiefs and Buck and Bills already. A lot of people talked about the Ravens win. People are still talking about that. And the Chiefs, obviously, and the Bills and Brock Purdy and the Lions. That's all great. We're going to talk football with the guys for picks on Friday. So instead of me doing it kind of twice, doing this solo episode here, I'm sticking to the Knicks. I'm sticking to this trade market stuff because I think it's really interesting. And I've gotten some great feedback on the Nick stuff. So I want to keep talking and keep pushing those buttons because I have some thoughts. And I think a lot of people have thoughts. And not all Knicks fans are aligned here. Not everyone's on the same page. So there's two real trains of thought here with the New York Knicks. One is this team has holes. This team's good. Let's push to fill those holes and make this team as competitive as possible right now. The other train of thought is this team is really good. And despite those holes, they should not risk putting this team at jeopardy moving forward by making a splash now move, right? So if we can agree on that, those are the two trains of thoughts that are basically available, and most Knicks fans fall into one of those buckets. Obviously, there's nuance. Obviously, there's some guys who kind of fit in between those molds who might be on the market, and we're going to talk about the top four prospects that are being talked about here in the Knicks trade market. The first one that holds into the first bucket, falls into the first bucket, is DeJounte Murray. He's the guy of the top trade targets who's going to be getting paid the most, has the longest contract, is probably the closest to a quote-unquote star player of the bunch. And we'll talk about if I think that's a good idea or not. But he's the one who fits into bucket number one. There's holes. This team's good. Let's attack it, fill the holes, and be as competitive as possible and make a push for this thing right freaking now. Okay? The other guys that include Bruce Brown, Jordan Clarkson, Malcolm Brogdon, and maybe I'll throw in Daniel Gafford, but even though he's more of a big, I mean, not more big, he is a big, so he doesn't exactly fill the really big hole of secondary playmaker. He's more filling for injuries with now Hartenstein joining Mitch being injured. Hartenstein probably back sooner. Mitch, we still don't know. So obviously there's holes at center, but it's not like they're long-term holes. Hartenstein's been so freaking good. How much capital do you want to put into filling out the big man rotation? Who's to say? Also, the buyout market comes into play with the Knicks there. They are actually a team in that market who can be a player, who can convince a veteran center to sign with them to make a playoff push. Because we know it every year. There are certain guys who get bought out, certain guys who are done with their teams, and they try to go to teams in the playoffs, right? Normally, the Knicks have been on the fringes of those conversations, and right now they're in that conversation. They are aligned perfectly with the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Miami Heat. They are just behind the Sixers. They are slightly behind the Bucks. They are far behind the Celtics right now, but you get the gist. What do the Celtics really need in that rotation? Maybe some Porzingis insurance. Does that guy exist? I don't know. So Gafford, I'm kind of going to leave out of the conversation. I'm going to focus on Bruce Brown, Jordan Clarkson, and Malcolm Brogdon. But to me, the most interesting piece as far as like a dialogue concerns or as far as like a point of contention is concerned is DeJounte Murray. Because Bruce Brown, Clarkson, Brogdon, they fall into bucket number two. A little bit more low risk, not as high of a ceiling, but pieces that fill holes, pieces that make this roster better, at what cost? Okay, so that's bucket two. Back to bucket number one. DeJounte Murray is the best player of the bunch. I'm pretty sure no matter which bucket you fall into as a fan, you probably agree on that statement. DeJounte Murray is the best scorer, or at least the highest volume type scorer of that bunch. You can talk about efficiency if you want, but he can get buckets. He's averaging 21 points a game. He has a reputation as a really strong defender. We know he's led the league in steals. We know he came into this league as a guy who needed to refine his offensive skills, but the defensive skills were pretty much on display since he started getting consistent playing time back in San Antonio. So let's talk about the contract real quick for DeJounte Murray. He signed an extension with Atlanta that kicks in next year. So starting next year, he'll be making at least $25 million all the way through the 2027-28 season. In that season, 27-28, he has a $31 million player option. Sounds like a large number. It is a large number. It's not a true max contract. It's not an insane number. We know the importance of these high-tier, not max contracts and what they can do for a team. Look at Brunson and how goddamn team-friendly his contract is. Same thing for Julius Randle. But with Randle and Brunson both existing here right now, and neither of them being in this trade, theoretically, for DeJounte Murray, you now look at that. If you commit to DeJounte Murray this year, are you committing to him for the next four? And that question is important. Because unless you think that DeJounte Murray undoubtedly puts the Knicks in the championship conversation this year, you'd be making that trade with the idea of committing to him for the next four. Now, of course, every contract is tradable, as we found out over the past 5 years in the NBA. But you don't make a trade for a guy like DeJounte Murray, who's a starter, who's not coming off the bench. Let's get that clear. DeJounte Murray is not coming to New York to be the sixth man. He's a starter. You make that trade with the minimal idea of him being a part of this rotation as a starter for the next 4 years. Is that something you're willing to commit to? Maybe, maybe not. I think that, unfortunately, the way it's played out in Atlanta has been negative for DeJounte Murray. This is a guy who was sought after, who got a haul back to San Antonio for that trade to Atlanta. Obviously, he signed the extension, and we kind of know where he's at right now. Well, currently, he's a 21-point-per-game guy, a guy who's assists way down, but obviously his role here in Atlanta, or there in Atlanta, is a lot different than what he was doing in San Antonio. In San Antonio, he was a 21-9 guy running the show for the Spurs. He was an all-star. He's a great player. In Atlanta, with Trae Young there, he hasn't been asked to do all of the same things. So his points in Atlanta have been 20 points and 21 points in his 2 years. Now his assists have been 6 and 5. Now this has been the best three-point shooting percentage year this has been the best three-point shooting year of his career. He's at 39% on 6 attempts. That's really freaking good. That point is important to this conversation, because trading for him in a vacuum makes sense, right? Oh, a guy who can score 20, a guy who can play defense, a guy who can run the offense when Jalen Brunson's not on the floor. Where's the downside? The downside is that since he's joined Atlanta with another point guard, which he also is basically a point guard, even though he's now deemed a shooting guard, has not been successful. In fact, in Atlanta, the combination this year of DeJounte Murray and Trae Young on the floor together, which has been 912 minutes, the third highest two-man combination for DeJounte Murray in Atlanta this year, has been a negative 5.6 per 100 possessions. Now, we know on-off is not everything. We know that plus-minus is not everything. But looking at what DeJounte Murray and Trae Young, two undoubtedly incredibly talented guys, are doing together on the court has been negative. The Knicks pride themselves on defense. The Knicks carry this defense by a team effort. They carry this defense because of rim protection and now OG Anunoby, effort from Brunson, DiVincenzo, and Hart doing their thing, Randall being solid when he's locked in, and most of the time he's been this year. But Murray and Trae Young, who have great rim protectors on their team, and Clint Capella, and Onyeka Okongwu, and even DeAndre Hunter, who's a great wing defender, it's been not looking that good. In fact, DeJounte Murray and DeAndre Hunter on the court together have been a -3. DeJounte Murray and Clint Capella have been a -4. And you kind of go through it and you say, well, what's the common denominator in Atlanta? What's the shortcoming for DeJounte Murray? And maybe it falls back to Trae Young. And maybe it falls back to this team just not being built properly. Their pieces make sense. They make more sense than they've been putting out there on the court every night on paper. So is it a DeJounte Murray problem? Is it a Trae Young problem? Is it an Atlanta Hawks problem? Is it their coaching staff problem? Well, they got a new coach, a coach who's well-regarded in Quinn Snyder, and he hasn't been able to figure it out. And with the plus-minus stuff, obviously, as a team, as an 18-25 team as they are right now, they're a negative in the plus-minus just as a full team. Their point differential is minus 2.7. They're in 10th right now in the Eastern Conference. They're giving up 122 points per game. Now, a lot of that falls on Trae Young, right? Because he's the face of the franchise. He's obviously not a good defender, but with the pieces they have around him, it's surprising that their defense is still so bad, right? Think about it. DeJounte Murray, DeAndre Hunter, Clint Capella, Onyeka Okongwu, four guys who are individually regarded as plus defenders, all underperforming because of one guy. Now, there's been teams out there that have bad lead or point guard defenders who haven't been this bad. But you know, based on what the Milwaukee Bucks are doing and them just firing their coach, that this is something that can be rough. And that's why I did put Jalen Brunson, who's not a great defender, by the way. He's an average defender. He does a lot of the effort stuff. Obviously, we know he takes a bunch of charges. He has good hands. He moves just enough to kind of stay in front of guys, gives him fits. He's tough. He's physical. Whatever. Jalen Brunson's an okay defender. He's not a great defender. He's not a bad defender. The Knicks have one of the best defenses in the league right now. Again, in theory, DeJounte Murray comes into town and instantly makes this defense better. But since DeJounte Murray has joined Atlanta, even with Trae Young, his shots haven't gone down. He's still taking 18 shots per game. He's taking more threes, which is nice, especially since he's shooting at a better clip. But he's a career 34% three-point shooter. Do we expect him to be a 39% three-point shooter for the rest of his career? I don't know. He's only shot that clip once before in his career. It was his rookie season, and he was taking less than one per game. So has this guy now officially become a knockdown shooter? I've watched him play. Stroke looks smooth. He can hit tough, contested shots. But something seems to be missing with him. And to me, back to the buckets here, bucket one being the bucket of they have holes. He fills that hole. Go for it. Make this team as good as it possibly can be right freaking now. The other bucket being let's play it safer, a little bit less risk, a little bit less ceiling potential, and get one of these other guys. DeJounte Murray, in the world of a cost-benefit analysis, doesn't move the needle enough for me to commit all the assets that it will take to get rid of him, which will be the Fournier contract, which is whatever. It's going to be moved at some point, we think. It's been talked about for 2 years now. It's going to possibly take Quentin Grimes. It's going to take some first-round picks and maybe someone else. Who knows, right? There's a lot of rumors out there. Does DeJounte Murray, from a cost-benefit analysis standpoint, move the needle enough? Has he proven to you that he's the right guy? Again, there's two trains of thoughts here. One, he's playing on a team with talent right now, with an incredibly talented offensive point guard next to him in Trae Young, with some good rim protectors and some good 3-and-D type guys around him. And the plus-minus and the advanced metrics have actually been worse for him in Atlanta since he left San Antonio. And the other side of it is, wait, maybe when you put him in this new situation with a more emphasis on defense from a team perspective, next to OG Anunoby, next to Brunson, who's not as bad of a defender as Trae Young, next to Hartenstein, next to Randall, maybe he fits right in. Maybe he just propels this team right into a top defensive tier team like they already are. Maybe he makes them better. My guesstimation on this, my thought on DeJounte Murray, is that it won't work as well as we think it would, as it would in a vacuum, as it would in NBA 2K. Because from what I've seen out of him, watching, you know, a few games here and there for Atlanta, I'm not tapped into every single game, but I've seen a handful of games this year. He wants to be a scorer. He's not the defender he was in San Antonio. He's not as locked in about being that dude giving the other team fits on defense. He wants to be the dude who's getting buckets, which is why he's at the highest points per game he's been in his career right now. Which is why he's taking just as many shots as a number two as he was as the number one in San Antonio when he was an all-star. This guy's an all-star, okay? If you don't think that means something, it means something. So part of it to me is if you're going to add a star, this person needs to either fit so perfectly that he's going to be okay going from 17 shots back to 14 shots per game. Don't know if that's true. And he has to be locked in on defense like the reputation that he has. And I don't know if that's true either. His efficiency numbers are good this year, and yet his advanced metrics still aren't. When you go to Basketball Reference and you look at the win shares, which is something that I kind of just peek at every once in a while to see, you know, if the eye tests and the stats that I see from accounting perspective add up to the win shares. Now, again, Atlanta Hawks, not been a very good team this year. Is that in spite of DeJounte's great play? Or is that due to him not playing the right way? His PER has been down since he joined Atlanta, back to where he was before his All-Star season in San Antonio. And his win shares are below his career average, 0.083. That number probably means nothing to you guys. When you're at the 0.1 plus, not 0.0 something, that's usually a decent benchmark to how successful you are and how consistently you're impacting winning. And what bothers me the most about the advanced metrics with DeJounte Murray is the defensive plus minus for him is a negative 0.7. The first time he's been in the negatives since he was playing minuscule minutes as a rookie in San Antonio. So basically, since this guy has been playing consistent minutes, which is his second year when he was 21 years old, he has not just been a good defender. He has been an elite defender. Looking at the defensive plus minus again, he was a 2.2 plus, 1.3, 1.0, 1.7 in his years in San Antonio. Last year in Atlanta, he was a 0.0. Perhaps that could be argued that's because of the Trae Young of it all, new system. They didn't have a great coach at that point in time. They weren't very consistent on that end, and he was not really fitting in right. Well, now they're on to year two, and not only is he still not a positive defender, for the first time in his career, basically, he's netting out as a negative defender. And I have a hard time blaming all of that on Trae Young, because he had the reputation of being locked down. He had the reputation of being a game changer defensively. And when that All-Star hit and the 20 points per game hit, he didn't seem to have that same intensity defensively. So my bet, my best option, is to not make the move for DeJounte Murray. It's not worth it. Even though in a vacuum, it can make sense. There's a chance it would propel this team to be even better and maybe not be a fringe 4-5 team, but be that 4, be that 3 seed. That's possible. But to me, it's unlikely. To me, it doesn't net out as a guarantee by any stretch of the imagination. Some of the other stuff is good, right? Like his offensive box plus minus is solid. Not as good as his All-Star season, but it's one of the best numbers he's had in his career. And the Knicks do need offense. The Knicks do need another playmaker. But I don't think this one works. I don't think this one makes sense. Because again, DeJounte's not coming here to play 22 minutes per game. DeJounte Murray definitely is not coming here to come off the bench. And yes, he might be the type of guy who can be traded again a year from now. But at what cost? At what return? And with where this team is right now, with some of the other moves that I'm going to talk about in a minute here, they have a puncher's chance. The big question with the Knicks right now is not can they beat the teams they're supposed to beat? Because frankly, right now, they are beating every team that they're supposed to beat for the most part. They are 19-1 against teams below 500. If I'm not mistaken, that number changed recently, which means one of the teams that they beat, they were above 500, and then now they're below 500. I think that's how that works, because I don't think they lost to a team who was below 500 when they were below 500. They're beating who they're supposed to beat. The question on them is they haven't been able to punch up. I think they have, out of their 17 losses, 8 of them are against top 2 seeds, maybe more than that. They have 2 losses against the Cavs, 2 losses against the Magic, lost to the Mavericks. Those all sting, but they're reasonable losses. Can they punch up? Well, in the new year, since OG Anunoby came into town, they beat the Timberwolves, number 1 seed in the West. They smoked the 76ers in a game where Joel Embiid played. So it's not like you can use that as an excuse. So maybe they can punch up now with OG Anunoby. Maybe they do have some of that little firepower, the little extra juice that we didn't know they had a month or so ago. So you can argue that the DeJounte Murray is the right risk to take that big step, to take that big swing. I'm arguing, based off what we saw in Atlanta for the past year and a half now, is that it's not close to guaranteed enough to move the asset it's going to take to get a guy who probably wants to be an All-Star again, who wants to continue to score 20 points per game, who wants to continue and should continue to play 34 minutes a game. And perhaps that's perfect for Tibbs. You can make that argument to me and I'll listen to it. You can make it right now that DeJounte Murray playing 32 minutes a game is going to greatly benefit the Knicks' outlooks on the rest of the season. I'll hear it. I just don't fully agree with it. Not enough for the assets it's going to take. The Knicks have been too patient. The Knicks have been too calculated over the past few years with Leon Rose at the helm to take a swing to maybe get to a 4 seed and lock that in. Because I don't think the prospects of DeJounte Murray guarantees they're better than Cleveland, guarantees they're better than Miami, who just made a trade of their own for Terry Rozier, or definitely doesn't guarantee that they're better than the Sixers or the Bucks. I think right now they're in that conversation, and that's where they should be. I don't think this move puts them high enough up for the price it's going to take. And that brings us to bucket number two. Bruce Brown, Jordan Clarkson, Malcolm Brogdon. Bruce Brown has one more year on his deal at $23 million, currently with Toronto. We know he was just in the trade with Pascal Siakam. We know what he just did in Denver last year. We know what he brings to the table. I love Bruce Brown. I've been very happy with watching him play basketball for a couple years. He was awesome in Brooklyn. He filled this role that was like, you didn't even know it existed. And all of a sudden he's doing all these things. He's rebounding pretty well for a guy who's kind of small. He's great inside the rim. His shooting has gotten a little bit better, a little up and down, but a little bit better. He's in the mid-30s. Last year for Denver, he shot 36% from three-on-three attempts. Pretty damn solid. Can't ask for much more from Bruce Brown, especially with the energy he brings, the rebounding he brings, the slashing that he brings. But the Bruce Brown question, even though he's the guy who I've said for 2-3 years now, is somebody who you'd want on any team. You'd want him on every team. Maybe not the Knicks. Maybe it doesn't make sense for the Knicks because he, unfortunately, is a little bit too similar to Josh Hart, a little bit too similar to Dante DiVincenzo. He's not the shooter that Dante is, obviously, but he's a little bit in that mold. So if you're giving up a Quentin Grimes and just saying, oh, he'll take the Quentin Grimes role, again, it comes back to the question, is Bruce Brown going to be in for the Quentin Grimes role? Is he going to be in for getting somewhere between 12 and 22 minutes a game? We're talking about a guy who's played over 20 minutes in his career, basically every single year since he was a rookie in Detroit. Played 20 minutes as a rookie. So Bruce Brown, for as much as I love him, and I think he makes every team he's on better, that doesn't quite make sense to me, though the contract is fine because next year is the final year and that's movable. He's an impactful winning type player, and that's all fine and dandy. But Bruce Brown doesn't really add up for me. And kind of with what he's done recently, it's a low risk move, but it's a move that doesn't necessarily fill the need of what the Knicks want right now. Between DiVincenzo, Grimes, and Hart, I should probably put Hart above Grimes, but those three players, they occupy that 2-3 position. Good defenders, can shoot a little bit, can make impact plays here and there in different ways. And unfortunately, Bruce Brown is just too similar to that and not worth making the move for him. So I think Bruce Brown would be out, even though I like him a ton as a player. I love what he brings to the table. It just doesn't fill those holes that we're talking about with the Knicks roster. And that brings us to Jordan Clarkson. Now, Jordan Clarkson also has one of these contracts right now that just kind of makes sense for where the Knicks are at. Kind of makes sense for every team. He's a $14 million contract for 2 more years after this year. That's the extension that he signed. It's 14 in 24-25, and it's 14.2 in 25-26. Wow. Now that right there is a team-friendly, very good contract. And depending on what's going to go on for his asking price, he is the type of guy who very specifically fills in the roles that you need filled for the Knicks. Right now, he's playing 30 minutes a game. On a really good team, he's probably not a 30-minute per game guy. And we know because he's only started about a little less than half of the games for the Jazz this year. And he has been closing tons of games for them recently. We know what he brings to the table. shot making. He can shoot the three a little bit. He can get to his own spots. He's a decent little passer there. He's averaging 5 assists a game for Utah right now, really able to run the show. But Utah is hungry for creation. They're hungry for playmakers, and they've been playing so much better. And some of his statistics right now, from a percentage standpoint, are not pretty. So if a lot of people, you know, then this is something, again, that it comes back to the OG Anunoby trade. Just want to touch on this real quick. Like, when the Knicks traded for OG Anunoby, I know exactly how it went down. And if you go to my TikTok and Instagram, like, I called it out. And it's not to say, like, oh, I know ball better than you. It's not that at all. It's just that I'm a loser and I watch more basketball than you, right? So I'm not trying to say I'm better at you at assessing talent here in the NBA. I just know that I'm a weenie who watches the Jazz play the Kings on a Tuesday night. It's one of the things that I do consistently, right? I watch a lot of basketball, right? And with OG Anunoby, every Knicks fan instantly at the trade, what do? They go to Basketball Reference. Oh, what's OG Anunoby been up to in Toronto? I've seen him play 3 times in my life. Okay. I don't know. Is he good? Like, I've seen a highlight or two. I don't really know. And that's okay, right? Like, not everyone's supposed to watch the Toronto Raptors that frequently. You see him when he plays the Knicks, and maybe you don't even focus on him because he's not your guy. You don't care, right? I knew a little bit more of what OG offered compared to the average Knicks fan. Again, not saying I'm better than you. It's just that I'm a loser and I watch more basketball. And now Knicks fans quickly noticed, oh my God, this OG guy, he does all these things that are so great. He's so physical. He's so big. He's so long. This guy can finish around the rim with physicality. This guy really shoots the hell out of it from three, especially in the corner. And you're seeing it. Now you watch him, and now you see what a lot of people saw. And you understand why he was this trade piece people talked about like every day for 2 years. Jordan Clarkson, right now, the percentages don't look good. You're going to go to Basketball Reference and say, Jordan Clarkson, what's he up to? Oh, he's shooting 6 threes a game at 32%. That doesn't sound very good. Oh, he's under 50% on 2-point field goals. That can't be good. That's probably one of the lowest marks in the league. That's not very good. That's way below his average. All right. But the counting stats, 18 points per game, 5 assists. That sounds really good, right? So what he's being asked to do in Utah right now is absolutely what he would not be asked to do consistently in New York. And to me, he is just inverse enough to Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo, and Quentin Grimes. He is. And at $14 million next year and the year after that, this is the type of guy who you take the low risk on and say, what can this guy do at 22 minutes a game? What can this guy do taking some of those Grimes minutes and maybe some Hart minutes and some of those Miles McBride minutes? And even if you're a Knicks fan who likes Miles McBride, which I like Miles McBride, I do. Even if you like him, you know he's not the point guard answer. He's a undersized 3D 2/1, right? Jordan Clarkson is the one who can play make, who can get his own shot, who will fill that role that the Knicks don't have right now, which is a secondary off-the-bench playmaker. So if Randall or Brunson aren't on the court, how's his offense running? It's been weird without them, right? Hart does it a little bit. McBride can do it a little bit. It's not quite there. Jordan Clarkson fills that role. But the big hesitation with Jordan Clarkson has nothing to do with Jordan Clarkson. Has nothing to do with his percentages. Nothing to do with his 18 points a game or his 5 assists. Has everything to do with the team he's currently on. A, Will Hardy is pulling the right strings right now. So I don't have it in front of me. Actually, I'm going to pull it up as we speak here. But his splits over the past month or so, my guess is that they're a lot better than they've been. And let's go to it right now. Wow. Correct. In December, his true shooting percentage was 47%. In January, in 11 games where he started 0 of them, but has been finishing a lot of them, playing 30 minutes a game, true shooting percentage is 58%. That's phenomenal. That's really good, right? His usage is also 28%, which means when he's on the court, he's doing stuff and they're relying on him, which means I think the Knicks could too. But again, the hesitation with Jordan Clarkson has nothing to do with Jordan Clarkson, nothing to do with his contract or his statistics. Because in January, he's 36% from three, and that's really good. Danny Ainge is in charge of Utah, okay? And this might sound to you like, oh, cop out, scared of Danny Ainge, burned you too many times as the head of the Celtics. Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm scared of Danny Ainge. And Danny Ainge don't just make trades, okay? Danny Ainge doesn't just say, we're not going to really go anywhere this year. Let me just get rid of this contract, get some picks, and call it a day. Mm-mm. Danny Ainge will get multiple picks. Danny Ainge will end up with a player, and he won't do it otherwise. He just won't. And that, to me, is why the Clarkson thing, as much as I like the fit and like what he can do for the Knicks and fill the holes that are needed to be filled right now, I don't trust that the price will be right. And if Leon Rose, who seems like a stubborn SOB in a good way, like Danny Ainge, I don't think he's making the trade if he don't like the price. And that's the big difference right there. Because Ainge knows when he has something that people want. Clarkson is somebody people want right now. And what will Danny Ainge do if he don't get the price? He'll keep rolling Jordan Clarkson out for 30 minutes a game as his plus minus is averaging 7 in January as they are cooking. They've won 15 out of 20, if I'm not mistaken, in Utah. Playing really well. Jordan Clarkson has been really big in those wins. His true shooting percentage in wins is 60%. His true shooting percentage in losses is 46%. Him playing well is big for them. They're not going to tank. We know it. If they were going to tank, they would have done it last year. If they were going to tank, they would have made more trades ready this year. They're desperate for a ball handler. Knicks don't have one to offer back for them. So that is the hesitation for Jordan Clarkson with me. Not Jordan Clarkson, Danny Ainge in Utah. Last option here, and this might be the answer. It's Malcolm Brogdon. Malcolm Brogdon's in Portland right now doing what? I don't know. What's he doing in Portland? Sucks when you see a guy who just really feels like he fits that mold of key contributor to a winner, and he's stuck on a team that stinks, right? He wasn't starting right away. Now he's been starting. He's 15 points per game, 5 assists. That's what he does. In his best of years, his worst of years, you know you're getting some good assist numbers out of Malcolm Brogdon, and you know you're getting some buckets out of Malcolm Brogdon. Right now, he's 42% from 3, which is just phenomenal. He don't really turn the ball over, which is just phenomenal. Malcolm Brogdon is such a great piece. A guy who we know, on a contender last year, won the Sixth Man of the Year, could be willing to take that role on a team that's good. And he played 26 minutes a game for Boston, started 0 last year. Now, because how bad the Trailblazers are right now and how slow of a start Scoot Henderson got off to, Brogdon's been thrusted into doing a lot for Portland. And like it kind of shows, right? Like it's a bad team. And he's not an empty calories guy. Malcolm Brogdon's not the type of player who, because his usage has the opportunity to increase, that it's going to increase like crazy and he's just going to put up 27 a game. Like it's not how he plays. He plays the game incredibly the right way. He's a good defender. He can finish around the rim a little bit, even though that's gone down a bit with him getting a little bit older. He's 31 years old now. Obviously, he's had some injuries. We're going to get to the injuries. He can shoot the lights out, and he makes great decisions. Malcolm Brogdon, even with the negativity in his team stinks, right? You know the Portland Trailblazers record? 12-31. And again, back to DeJounte Murray real quick. And they're 18-25, much closer to 500 than Portland. And DeJounte Murray has the lowest win shares of his league from a percentage standpoint of his career. DeJounte Murray, his box plus minuses are in the negatives pretty much. Malcolm Brogdon, even on the Portland Trailblazers, has a 0.118 win shares per 48 minutes. As opposed to DeJounte Murray, who's on a team that has more wins, a team that has a lot more talent, a team that has more pieces to pass the ball to, and he's a 0.08? In the world of win shares per 48 minutes, it's a pretty big difference, by the way. I could pull it up here, but that's probably the difference of about 40 people, 40 spots or so in the NBA, in the totals. I'm going to look that up out of curiosity now, too. So Malcolm Brogdon really fits this mold. Man, he really fits this mold. And right now, I'm just gonna do this here. Malcolm Brogdon is 79th in win shares per 48. And DeJounte Murray is 138th. So I said 40. I was wrong. It's like 70. It's like 70 spots different. All right. So from an advanced metric standpoint, you might say, oh, if someone's on a bad team, of course their metrics are going to be bad. Not for Malcolm Brogdon, because he plays the game so soundly. He makes the right passes. He makes the right reads. He takes the right shots. He doesn't force. He can operate in offense. And that's why I think he's absolutely perfect. And if Portland isn't a fire sale and saying, we suck, we ain't going anywhere, let's just get assets, we're going to be in the draft lottery at the top of it again. Malcolm Brogdon, outside of tutoring Scoot Henderson a little bit and Anthony Simons a little bit, what is he really accomplishing them in Portland? And you can argue how much his tutelage can matter, but he's probably going to be traded at some point. And if the cost of doing business for Malcolm Brogdon is 50% less than DeJounte Murray, the cost-benefit analysis comes back into play. And you say to yourself, the range of outcomes trading for DeJounte Murray with all that you have to give up are from being, you know, 10% worse to 50% better. 50% better is insane, but you know what I mean? 10% worse to 20% better. And the range of outcomes for Malcolm Brogdon are from 0% worse to 20% better. I'm taking that every time, especially with the assets that you'd have to give up. Malcolm Brogdon fits this need, fills that hole perfectly. Now, I can't do this whole thing and not mention some of the issues with Malcolm Brogdon because they're obvious. He's been banged up in his career. Malcolm Brogdon has had injuries. In fact, he hasn't played over 70 games in a season since his rookie year. And that was part of the reason why he fell in the draft. And then he won one of the weirder rookie of the years in history because his numbers were 10 points per game. But it was a weird year, right? I think it was Embiid's year, if I'm not mistaken, when Embiid was only played like 30-something games. So like, who was going to win it? It was Brogdon, right? Brogdon's had injuries. Here are the games played for him in his career. 75 as a rookie, 48, 64, 54, 56, 36. Then he got back up to 67 last year, which was really good. And then this year, so far so good. He's played 33 games. I'm pretty sure that's probably about 75, 80% of Portland's games this year. So still a little bit banged up right now, right? Do the Knicks need him day in, day out? Do the Knicks need him to make sure this team is a top five seed? I don't think so. And that's why, to me, this is the right type of risk. And then, which I haven't mentioned yet, the contract for Malcolm Brogdon is also super reasonable. He's at $22 million this year, and then next year is the last year of his deal at $22 million. So if this doesn't work out, if he's injured, if it's not the fit that you thought it would be, expiring $22 million contract, even the most irrelevant player in the league with an expiring $20 million contract has worth, is tradable. You attach it to something, attach it to a thing to get another thing at back that's better. Evan Fournier doesn't matter for the Knicks. He's a zero right now. He doesn't play. And he is an asset. He can help them get someone like this back. And for the Portland Trailblazers who are going nowhere, Fournier can go to Portland. And guess what? The Portland Trailblazers will be happy to have $22 million off their books after this season, as opposed to still being shit and having $22 million off the books after next season. So this was a long-winded way of saying, out of these options, DeJounte Murray, Bruce Brown, Jordan Clarkson, Malcolm Brogdon, the home run to me is Malcolm Brogdon. That's the one to do. Said this already, but the Knicks have been too patient, too calculated, too consistently climbing the ladder to take the big swing that's not worth it. DeJounte Murray is like a 3-0 pitch in baseball. You might take a hack and hit it out of the yard. There's a good chance you're going to pop that thing up. You're going to foul out. You're going to swing through and maybe get another swing. You're going to roll it over to third, right? Malcolm Brogdon may be more of the, oh, it's a 2-2 count. And I'm going to smoke this thing into right center. And maybe I'll get a double. But at minimum, I feel like I'm going to hit a single. Man, 2-2 is probably not the right count for that. Bad analogy. Maybe 2-1. Let's talk about that. 3-1, baseball. How you doing? But that's what it comes down to for me. So wherever you land as a Knicks fan, if you're in bucket one, which is this team's really good, but not great, let's fill the hole and be as best as we can right now. DeJounte Murray is probably your answer. I tried to explain with rationality, with understanding of DeJounte being the best individual talent out of the group I've talked about today, that I hear that thinking. It's just not the thinking that I have. I fall into bucket number two. I appreciate the Knicks building. I appreciate rooting for a team that looks like they're going to be back-to-back playoff contenders, right? Like, let's not talk championship contenders, but like playoff contenders. They made the second round last year. Looks like, depending on how far, they can make it back to the second round and then have that puncher's chance like they did last year. And Brogdon makes sense. That's bucket number two. I love Bruce Brown. I'm a big fan. Doesn't fit the needs of what the Knicks want right now. I like Jordan Clarkson. I don't think the Knicks will get Clarkson for the right price right now because of Danny Ainge in Utah and him being a stubborn SOB on his own right. Malcolm Brogdon can be gettable for a reasonable price. Malcolm Brogdon can impact winning every time he suits up. And Malcolm Brogdon in the playoffs last year was not hurt. He missed one game in the playoffs last year, which was obviously at a pretty bad time. he played every game in the playoffs until game six of the Eastern Conference Finals, where the Celtics actually did get a win, where they were kind of rolling there for a little bit. But he played through the playoffs, played 67 games last year. His health is probably as good as it is now as it was 4 years ago. He's 31. He's probably the equivalent of like a 34-year-old with the injuries and whatnot. But he does the right stuff consistently all the time and can shoot the ball, make the right pass, play decent defense. He fits every hole. That star that Knicks are gazing for, I don't think it's DeJounte Murray. And I don't think that star that Knicks are gazing for right now exists at the moment. Malcolm Brogdon is the calculated, proper move for a Knicks team that without him and without any moves is already a top five-ish, maybe six, depending on the Heat with Terry Rozier, but a top five, maybe number four, seeded team that can punch side to side very well, meaning they compete with the Cavs, they compete with the Heat, they can compete with the Sixers in the playoffs. I believe that. Can they compete with the Bucks and Celtics right now? No. Does DeJounte Murray make that make more sense? No. Does Malcolm Brogdon make that make more sense? I don't think so. And that's my point. The piece that you think is going to push them to Milwaukee and Boston doesn't exist. Their chance to punch up with DeJounte, with Brogdon, without DeJounte, without Brogdon, is probably just as good as it is with them. You tick it up just a little bit. And from a cost-benefit analysis, which is now the fourth time I've said this on this podcast, the cost is too high for the possible benefit from DeJounte. For Malcolm, the cost is just right for the possible benefit of Malcolm Brogdon that might just be equal to DeJounte Murray. So there we go. I love Brogdon. I kind of like all these guys, if I'm being frank. I think DeJounte Murray needs that change of scenery. I think he needs to be surrounded by a winning culture to get the best out of him, which is why, again, when I was talking about him, I was very clear that like I'm hearing every argument why the Knicks should do it. I hear it. I actually contemplate it. I'm torn myself. But when it comes down to it, if I was making decisions, it's not the decision I'd make based on the consistent growth, the consistent competitiveness that the Knicks have now built over the past 2 years. Brogdon is the lower risk, just about a similar ceiling to DeJounte, and that's the move I'd make if possible. And that's all I got. Subway Sports Talk, 50 minutes here of talk, which, you know, classic here by myself, Tuesday night, Well, now it's Wednesday morning. It's 12:30 a.m. Told myself, you know, it's pretty late. I had a work event. I'm going to get this done in like 25 to 40 minutes tops. 50 minutes. What can you expect? When I get rolling on the Knicks, when I get rolling on any of these topics, I have too much fun. I like breaking it down. I like looking at both sides. And if you guys listen to this podcast, like, I hope you also hear how I feel, which is that I really do try to look at both sides and try to be rational as much as possible. Because I think that, like, as a true, just like, I'm a fan of one team. That's what I do, is like, I root for the Knicks. It's really easy to get caught up in the whirlwind, to get caught up in the hype, to be like, oh, this shiny thing is like what's going to be the ticket to bring my fandom to an even higher level of excitement. What I try to do as an NBA fan, on top of being a large Knicks fan, is think about the true impact and like, how would we look at this from other teams' perspectives? Like, if someone else traded for DeJounte Murray right now, it would super depend on which team that was as to how we looked at it. Like, that to me makes a huge difference. And as Knicks fans, we're obviously going to think, oh, it's going to help us because we're doing things right now. Atlanta thought the same exact thing. Atlanta made an Eastern Conference Finals in recent memory. And they're like, yeah, we can get DeJounte Murray, top tier defender, pretty good scorer, all-star, and pay him a reasonable number. No brainer. DeJounte's the answer. He's going to help Trey so much. He does all the things that Trey's not that good at so well. It's going to be a perfect pairing. It's been bad. There's no other way to say it. It's been a failure in Atlanta. And that doesn't mean DeJounte don't deserve another chance to get it right. He does, 100%. I just don't want it to be with the Knicks right now. And maybe in the offseason, DeJounte would be the right move. But at this moment, the way the Knicks are playing, the way they're situated in the Eastern Conference, it's just not the right move. It's not worth that type of shakeup when it's not guaranteed that you're getting some superstar. He's not a superstar. He's a one-time all-star. He's a really good player, a great talent. But the defense has gone down. The usage and percentages, I'm sorry, the usage has gone up. The percentages have gone down, except for three-point shooting. That's been really good this year. Can't argue that. But it's just not worth it to me. So hopefully you appreciate my train of thinking there. And maybe you agree. Maybe you disagree. Let me know. Please tell me who you think the Knicks should trade for, what they should give up. Because that's another thing. Like, in a vacuum, if you can get any of these four players, like, yeah, you'd probably rank them DeJounte, Brogdon, Clarkson, Brown. This ain't a vacuum. It ain't. Which means Clarkson's going to be a higher price than he should be. Meaning DeJounte Murray might be the biggest price of the bunch by a large margin. And trading for a Brogdon from a team that truly stinks, that has nothing to play for, who just wants a pick or two and to move off a contract that's going to save them a ton of money and allow them to take a leap next year. Like, that's the one. That's where you focus in on. That's where you can make your biggest bang for your buck. All right, Subway Sports Talk. Pete Kennedy, don't forget to subscribe and review on your podcast app. Again, if you're liking what you've been hearing, it means a ton to me when I see some new reviews pop up on Apple Podcasts, when I see some new likes pop up on Spotify, when I see a new follower on social media, when I see a comment or a DM. Like, that stuff is all just beautiful to me. Appreciate it every single day when I get to interact with y'all and when you guys turn this podcast on every day. It's awesome. Really do appreciate it. And I hope to keep doing it because I'm going to. That's what I'm going to do. Been doing it for 5 years, something like that. Not going to stop now. Talk to you soon. Subway Sports Talk.
Cheers.